September 6th, 2025, Vaigiri Monastery. And I thought this evening I'd like to talk about this idea of radical forgiveness that I've been reflecting on, thinking about quite a bit, because so often the obstacles we have in our practice are because we're not able to forgive. And if we look deeply, we'll see that that's the case. That is true. So this idea of just being able to forgive everything, and forgiveness is all, that's part of letting go, and to clear the debts, clear the accounts, and then we can dive into the practice, and practice won't be difficult if we can forgive. So it's forgiving others, forgiving ourselves, and this is also part of what we call abhayadana. So this is abhayagiri. And we talk about this idea of abhayadana. There's different types of dana or generosity. And there's regular dana. There's giving of requisites. There's giving of money. There's giving of support. That's dana. There's giving of service. But then there's the higher form of dana, which is abhayadana. Abhaya means fearless, but fearlessness is achieved through giving forgiveness. That's how abhayadana is defined. And then there's Dhamma Dana, which is the sharing of Dhamma, whether it's helping print or share Dhamma books, or sharing the Dhamma in terms of teaching, or sharing the Dhamma in terms of example of great conduct. For example, Lungpa Liem, he shares the Dhamma. He doesn't have to speak to share the Dhamma. He just displays it for everybody to see. And so that's Dhamma Dana. So talking about Abhayadana, and if we're able to clear the accounts in this way, clear the slate with other people, clear the slate with ourselves, then I think that we'll be able to make great strides forward in our practice, and we won't be stuck anymore in the places that we're normally stuck. So how do we do this? We think there's the thing about forgiveness is it's not logical. We won't be able to think of a good reason to forgive somebody, especially if, say, we've been treated unfairly, unjustly, or we see somebody else treated unfairly or unjustly. And we might try to think, well, I need a reason. I need to think of a reason to forgive them. So, but forgiveness is not logical. It's just, you just do it. You just forgive. That's what you do. And when you forgive, you will benefit, guaranteed. You will have guaranteed benefit if you're able to forgive. So we don't need to think of a reason to forgive. And forgiveness doesn't mean we're condoning bad behavior. It doesn't mean we're accepting that we're trying to say that bad action is good action. That's not the case. You know, for example, say that you're working for a company and you're in a team and one of your team members is not working well with the rest of the team. Say that, you know, maybe he's made promises to you, doesn't keep them, or say your team member doesn't really do what they said they're going to do, and they're actually bringing the whole team down. So we might think, yes, we do need to forgive that team member, but also it doesn't mean that you shouldn't kick that member off the team and forgive them for all their conduct, forgive them for, say, not being a team player, but then also kicking them off the team would be the correct thing to do in that case. And so forgiveness doesn't mean we just put up with or condone bad behavior, but it means that we don't hold grudges. So not holding grudges, not holding on to, you know, bringing it back to life over and over again. And, you know, this becomes an extra difficult thing. We can't just forgive. Sometimes we have to actually work up to it. Say people who have experienced abuse as children, for example, which the longer I'm a senior monk, the longer I'm in a position of knowing a lot of people and talking to a lot of people, I'm finding this is tragically common, actually, you know, having been a victim of child abuse. It's like so many people. And so almost to the point where I've thought that one possible translation for dukkha would be trauma. Is there is trauma. There is the cause of trauma. And then there's the you know, we're all traumatized, and everybody in society, it's like you go out into the city and everybody's traumatized. Everybody's walking around in a state of trauma, kind of heaviness of everything. So, and then there's the low level trauma of just the little dukkhas we experience on a daily basis. So whether it's the person standing in line at the cash register at the supermarket who's taking an extra long time, or their credit card doesn't work or something and we're kind of in a hurry, or whether it's just the relative who decided to betray us or run off with the inheritance. You know, this is so common. And, you know, it's really, we're all in the same boat. We're all in this together. It's the same for everybody. So when we think about how to forgive, then it's not logical. We just need to do it. And the origin story of this, the forgiveness ceremony that we have, which is one of our most important communal ceremonies that we have in the monastery, it's a very short ceremony where we do this at the beginning of Vasa to, you know, we'll go to pay respects to Longpa Mahaprasur, to Wat Budanason, for example, and we do this asking forgiveness ceremony. Not that there's anything we've necessarily done wrong or that he's done wrong, but we just do it in order to remain on good terms, have good relations. But the ceremony itself has a very profound meaning. So we say like Tere Pamadena, so like for to the elder, you know, for anything out of heedlessness that I may have done by body, speech, or mind, I ask forgiveness for that. So there's this asking forgiveness, and then the elder will, that we're paying respects to, will give forgiveness, and then he will ask forgiveness as well if there's anything he's done. So this comes from a story from Venerable Sariputta, when a monk actually punched Venerable Sariputta. He had developed a disliking for Venerable Sariputta and actually punched him, and felt remorseful afterwards, as he should, and then went to Venerable Sariputta and asked forgiveness, asked his pardon. And Venerable Sariputta said, "As you were punching me, I forgave you." He said, "As you were punching me, I forgave you, but I forgive you, and for anything inappropriate I may have done, may you forgive me as well." Of course, Venerable Sariputta doesn't need to ask forgiveness from anybody, but he also makes that gesture of, yeah, if there was anything inappropriate or unseemly that I did that caused you to develop this grudge against me, then I ask your forgiveness as well, and I apologize for that. So it's this really beautiful, humble ceremony. And so that's the origin story of it. And that develops spiritual power, that develops strong spiritual power when we're able to do that. And as we know, the Buddha talks about metta practice, you know, metta for yourself first, then you're going to have metta for others. I think it's kind of the opposite with forgiveness. It's harder to forgive ourselves. So we forgive others who have wronged us first, and then we can forgive ourselves for wrongs we may have done to others in the past. And then sometimes the hardest is actually seeing injustices or seeing when somebody harms another person. It's not directly toward us, but that can be even harder to let go of. You know, we can maybe let go of it when it's directed toward us. That's fine. I forgive that person. I even ask forgiveness for that person if I did anything to cause their behavior. But then when we see it done toward somebody else, it can be that sense of helplessness and, you know, not being able to forgive. So that's when the forgiveness is very illogical. We can't really think of a good reason. We might even think that behavior is unforgivable, or there is some people who are unforgivable for their, but again, forgiveness doesn't condone people's behavior. It's only seeing that not forgiving is a state of suffering in us, and it's unskillful, it's unwholesome. So we want to undo the causes of suffering, uproot ourselves from any sense of ill will or aversion that we may be holding on to, and forgiveness is a very good way to do that. And so a lot of people ask these days, you know, what can I do to help the world? There's a lot of awful things happening in the world, which is true. There's all sorts of people harming each other and all sorts of injustices and all sorts of traumas that are happening constantly right now, all the time in the world. What can I do? You know, I feel so helpless. You know, does it have any benefit just sitting here holed away in the monastery on a hillside in Redwood Valley? But yes, I think, in my opinion, I mean, it does have benefit. The most benefit, actually, is the most efficacious thing we can be doing, because we're not in a position to be able to save the world. I mean, we have this idea of, I think it comes from maybe watching action movies when we're young or playing video games. Like, we have this idea we want to save the world, but it's easier to forgive when we know it's not people doing those things. It's the defilements. It's the defilements that are causing all the harm. Lungpur Ban called them the mess makers. So the defilements are the mess makers, which are going around making messes all over the world, and they're making messes for us as well. And they're making messes in our kuti sometimes also. They're making messes all over the place. So we need to deal with this in ourselves. We can't deal with anybody else's defilements. And if we go out and shout at people who are doing wrong things in the world, they're just going to dig their heels in more. That's not going to really help. Yeah, somebody asked Ajahn Mahabua one time, if you know, anger, yeah, anger is wrong, but isn't it okay to be angry at the defilements? And Ajahn Mahabua responded by saying, if you get angry at the defilements, they'll just laugh at you. Yeah, because anger is a defilement. So we need to be able to deal with this in ourselves. We can't deal with anybody else's defilements. We can barely deal with our own defilements. So we do need to look at our own minds. And then through the development of spiritual power over time, yes, we can have an effect, but this is within the realm of beings who have great barami. You have like the Buddha converting Angulimala, who had killed 999 people and was on the way to kill his own mother. And the Buddha was able to intervene, and just through his spiritual power, just through a few actions and a few words, was able to cause Angulimala to have a complete turnaround and become one of the great disciples of the Buddha. And so this is something that can happen. This is within the realm of parami and spiritual power, but it's through that strong example. The Buddha didn't yell at Angulimala. He didn't get angry at him, but he actually was incredibly kind to him. All he said was, "When are you going to stop?" Yeah. So the story in brief of Angulimala is that Angulimala means garland of fingers. So he's got the fingers of all of his victims around his neck in a huge gory necklace. And he sees the Buddha and he starts to pursue him. And the Buddha does a feat of spiritual power where it seems like he's walking slowly, but Angulimala, running as fast as he can, can't catch up with him. And he thinks to himself, I can catch a running bull, a running elephant, but I can't catch this ascetic that seems like he's walking slowly in front of me. And so he yells out, "Stop, stop." And the Buddha turns around and says, "I've stopped forever. When will you stop?" And so that's it. So he drops his weapons and bows and he's one of the Ehi Bhikkhu bhikkhus. So he takes the Ehi Bhikkhu ordination where the Buddha just says, "Come, Bhikkhu." And then he undertakes the Dutanga practices and achieves arhantship. So this can happen. And there's also stories of our own great spiritual teachers with their own built up parami and spiritual power who can effect changes like this in people. So there's like the story of the assassin who was sent to kill Longpor Cha. And some of you may have heard this story, but he was actually sent. We don't know exactly who hired him. We can only speculate, but this assassin went to Wat Bapong with the intention to kill Longpor Cha. And in order to do that, he had to start to follow the daily schedule at Wat Bapong. And he ended up trying to see, you know, where is his kuti? What are his movements? Where does he go at what time? Where can I find a good place to take him out? But part of that was he ended up listening to some of Longpor Cha's Dhamma talks, and he developed faith in Longpor Cha, and so he started to reflect on his own actions and on his past. He had killed many people already as an assassin, and he decided to give back the contract, and he went back to Wat Bapong and asked for ordination, and he was a monk for the rest of his life, and he never disrobed. He died in the robes. A lot of things happened to him. He had a lot of bad karma, so similar to Angulimala, it's the story. He's on alms round, and he gets beaten and his bowl gets broken and he crawls back to the Buddha bloody, and the Buddha says, "Bear it, Brahman, you're experiencing now what you otherwise would have experienced in the hell realms if you wouldn't have ordained." So this assassin, he had all these accidents constantly happening to him, but he was in the robes and he was practicing virtue and he turned his life around, and it was really in his best interest for sure. So somebody like Longpo Cha can have that type of an effect on somebody. They can turn a bad person into a good person, and that can happen. It is possible, but it takes spiritual power. It doesn't just happen easily. So, and no amount of yelling and shouting and hoping and wanting will cause that to happen. It really takes that spiritual power. It's when we know how to deal with our own defilements that these things, these changes can be put into effect, and we can actually make a difference. But it's tough. So I talk about forgiveness because this is really, it can really change our lives for the better. If we're really stuck or there's really some sort of obstacle in our practice, take a good look and see that I bet there's somewhere where there's a lack of forgiveness, an inability to just say completely forgive a person or a situation. We might be frustrated at just our situation. But more often than not, of course, it's going to be the difficult family member that we can't forgive, or the boss who fired us or criticized us in front of everybody else, even though it wasn't something we did. Or it's going to be the kid who we did everything for and then they turned on us and stole everything. Or it's going to be the unloved sibling who ran off with the inheritance and sued us, or whatever, you name it. You've got all these things that seem unforgivable, but then if we can really forgive, it's really in our best interest, and it will feel empowered by that. We will feel lifted up by our ability to do that, and the mind can become very courageous and very strong, very powerful when we do that, and practice will become easy. To get there, it takes a long time. It takes dedication. It takes a lot of dedication. I remember just coming here at 24 years ago. I came to Ubayagiri and being in Anagarika, and there was a number of strong characters here at the time. I was one of them, and I didn't get along with someone, and I had a pretty hard time letting go of what I saw as unjust and unfair actions being done toward me. But I remember making this determination at my kuti, going back and saying, okay, no matter what this person says to me, no matter what they do, I'm going to let go of it no matter what, no matter how awful it is, no matter how blaming of my behavior it is, I'm going to let go of it and just be okay with it and be respectful no matter what. So then I found I was able to do that. But then the thing I couldn't let go of was, and where I got really tested, was then when they did it to somebody else. So it wasn't to me. If it was to me, I could let go of it. But then when it was done to somebody else, then I couldn't let go of it. Okay, well, that's where I'm still stuck. So this took a very long time. And then, I would wonder, why are there these obstacles? Why am I stuck? And it's really the mind gets stuck on those negativities. And it takes a really long time to figure out that that's the tricky defilement that's playing out in the mind. And then at a higher level, if we're able to forgive in the moment while negativities are happening to us, and we're also too able to forgive ourselves in terms of accepting that we make mistakes also, and some of them we may have even genuinely harmed somebody and we do regret it and we want to undo the past, but we can't. So that's when we need to forgive ourselves, and that can be more difficult sometimes. So the Brahmaviharas are also a way to do this, developing equanimity. As those of us who have studied the suttas will know, that all of the Brahmaviharas need to be based in equanimity. So whether it's metta, or friendliness, loving kindness, or whether it's karuna, compassion, or whether it's mudita, joy, rejoicing, then those need to have a foundation of the fourth Brahmavihara, which is equanimity. That's important. So for somebody who has like very deep trauma from childhood, sexual abuse or whatever, it's going to be impossible to forgive at first. And even though, you know, getting to forgiveness, getting to that point will change one's life for the better, for much, much better, can turn everything around, can take away all the fear and make things give that sense of safety and power. But to get there is going to be difficult. So we have to back up. We can't just go straight to forgiveness. And by the way, forgiveness is also something which is part of gladdening the mind, which is a foundation for samadhi. So we all want, you know, to have a good meditation. But the Buddha says very clearly, you have to get the mind happy first. You don't get happiness after the meditation. It's not you get your samadhi together and then you're happy. It's you get your happiness together, then you can have some samadhi. The happiness is the natural lead-in to the meditation. So forgiveness is one of the ways that we gladden the mind. But then if we aren't able to do that, we have to back up again and go, you know, trace it back to how are we going to get to that next step? So developing equanimity and compassion. Compassion is that which sees suffering. Compassion sees suffering. It's more difficult than metta because metta sees happiness. Metta sees gladness and happiness, and compassion looks more directly at suffering. So it's a more difficult practice. So to see the suffering of not being able to forgive, then we link it with the First Noble Truth. So too, if we're not able to forgive in some way, shape, or form, say deep trauma, really, really difficult to get through it. Even the memories might lead to just incredible fear and the mind just clouds over and we're not able to go there yet. And that's totally understandable. And we need to forgive ourselves for perhaps not being able to forgive yet. So living in forgiveness. So to get to that point, we have to back up. You know, we might need to bring the mind to a state of ease using just the breath meditation. And when the mind feels like it's at ease and those memories of trauma aren't coming up as much, and we feel like we've been able to breathe through the fear and it subsides somewhat, then we can develop some equanimity by reflecting on kamma. I am the heir of my kamma, born of my kamma, related to my kamma, abide supported by my kamma, whatever kamma I will do, for good or for ill, of that I will be the heir. And all beings are in the same boat. All beings are the owners of their kamma, and so on. So that helps the mind to go into equanimity. That's the sutta-based standard way of developing equanimity, is reflecting on kamma. And it's not reflecting on it in a way like, oh, I deserve this, or they deserve it, or whatever. They need to be punished. Justice needs to be done. It's not that. It's just a reflection that whatever good and bad beings do, that's what comes back. So whatever good and bad we do, that's what comes back. And not just the bad, but the good as well. If we do much good, if we practice generosity and kindness and so on, that has to come back to us. Even if we say, no, I don't want the results of that goodness, it's still going to come back to us. We can't stop it. And the negativity is the same. So when we come into equanimity, say, okay, we can't change the past, we can't control these things, but this is the law of kamma as taught by the Buddha. Then when we have that basis of equanimity, then we can cultivate compassion, say for those who have treated us unfairly, unjustly, those who treat others unfairly, unjustly, we can cultivate compassion for their suffering. When we can cultivate compassion for their suffering, then that will tend to be reason enough to be able to forgive. So we might not be able to just forgive. We need some sort of reason. So we do that through compassion. We see the suffering of other beings. We see the suffering that being is lost in suffering. That's driving a lot of the actions. And there can be compassion for that and a sense of forgiveness. It's not condoning the actions. It's not saying that this is right. So because if somebody's harming other people, it's certainly wrong. However, equanimity then, coming back to equanimity again, it says they're the owners of that action and will most certainly get the results. I don't have to be their kamma. I don't have to be the one to punish them. Yeah, it's coming. It's coming to them. Even people who lack empathy, or have, you know, even if somebody is a complete lack of empathy, then the results of bad actions still come back to them. They won't feel bad in the moment, but it'll come back to them in some way, shape, or form later on. Those who have a lot of empathy then might experience the results of the actions. They say, if I have a lot of empathy and end up hurting somebody, I'm going to experience that result very quickly. However, for both, for all types of people, the result will get experienced at some point. So developing equanimity, then compassion, that will be reason enough for us to go into forgiveness. When we do that, the mind will be buoyed up, it'll be clear, bright, and we'll have a sense of power. Then we can really start to affect some change, both in ourselves and eventually we will be able to affect some changes externally as well through just our example, through our suggestions about ways to suffer less, and just through our sense of sharing and commitment to virtue, then this can actually have an effect. It takes a while to get there. We have to build that up. There's another story of, in case I get the story wrong, I'm not going to name who the monk is, but a very revered Western monk. And he was a Thai mafia boss, was inspired by his teachings. So one of the things I've heard about Thai mafia is some of the mafia bosses are pretty brutal. Like I've heard of one mafia boss that there was a rumor that if you look at him, he'll have you killed. So this is a Thai mafia boss who ended up becoming very inspired by the teachings of this particular Ajahn and ended up taking the five precepts with him. And that's a big deal. So he went back to his, I don't know what you call it, following posse, his posse. He went back to his gang and said, we're going to do things differently now. And so he's like, we're all going to keep the five precepts. And they're like, what is going on? Like, what's wrong with him? And he actually didn't live very long after that. He was killed a couple years after that. But I bet he did make a turnaround. He probably had a much better destination than he would have if he didn't take the five precepts. So that's incredible. That kind of thing changes the society. And needless to speak of the Buddha, who was such a game changer for world history in terms of getting millions upon millions of people to follow precepts and practice and cultivate the Dhamma. It's incredible when you think about it. So there's a lot of good. There's a lot of things to be grateful for. There's a lot of good things happening in the world. And we can really tap into that. As a junior monk or a Majjhima monk, when I was between my 5th and 10th Vasa, I spent most of that time in Thailand. And I remember having a pretty bad conflict with another monk at that time when I was living at Phujomgom, actually. And I was before my 8th Vasa, I started living there and ended up kind of saying some disrespectful things. I didn't realize I didn't kind of look at my intentions clearly, but some things I said set this person off, and they ended up starting to scream at me one time. So it had been a long time since I'd been screamed at. So I'd been kind of training in this forgiveness thing for a long time. And I remember the last time I had a conflict like this was when I was very, very junior with the same person I mentioned earlier, not to name names. And but I yelled back at that time. But this time, I didn't react in the same way. So I thought, okay, maybe my practice is working. So I apologize, I ask forgiveness. But then it was like, your apologies mean nothing. You're just dishonest. And so that didn't work. So I just kind of quiet took it, and then it kind of cooled off. And then time went on, and we ended up spending the Vasa together. And through this kind of forgiveness practice, things got really good, actually. It was all good. There was no grudges on either side. And we were able to heal that divide before too long. It was not that difficult, actually. But I could have gone the other way. I could have said, like, you know, to hell with this person. I'm never going to have any relationship with them again. But through forgiveness, it was just very easy. It was there was a sense of power with that. And yeah, I'm very grateful for these teachings and for this practice and for those ceremonies that we have, the forgiveness ceremony. It's done in a formalized way, but also just those principles, those Dhamma principles of kindness, generosity, forgiveness. And that's Abhaya Dana. In the end, it's for overcoming fear. That sense of fearlessness. Abhayagiri means fearless mountain, but it could also mean forgiveness mountain. If everybody forgives each other here, then there's no fear. There's no sense of fear, and there's nothing to be afraid of. We don't have to be afraid of each other. With the precepts and a sense of forgiveness, then everything is good. There will be times when we slip up, inevitably, where we make mistakes and where things get difficult and the suffering may last for a while. You know, a lot of these defilements can be very ingrained, entrenched, like a thorn that's deeply embedded in the heart, and we can't just pull it out in one fell swoop. We can't just, by one act of force, pull out the thorn from the heart, and we can't just practice really hard for a few months and be done with it. It's going to take time. It has to be done slowly and in a skillful way, and we can't force things. So, and then we have to be... It doesn't just take one or two qualities. It takes mindfulness, patience, generosity, kindness. All of these qualities together is what it takes in order to develop these spiritual powers of being able to forgive, of being able to not hold grudges, not hold on to ill will. Those are the real spiritual powers. Being able, eventually, you know, being able to live with non-suffering. And sometimes we might think, too, that... there could be a fear of annihilation. In terms, we read the Buddha's teachings about Nibbana and arhantship and think, I don't want to do that yet. I have this whole bucket list of things I want to do in my life. I don't want to just end it all now. I don't want to end all suffering or end rebirth because, you know, I want to experience all these things. I want to do this and I want to do that. But we need to get it through our minds that arhantship is the best way to live. It's not just the end of suffering, but it is the best way to live. And if we can convince ourselves of that and really, and it's not just telling ourselves that, because that is the testament that, say, the great beings like Lompur Man, Ajahn Chah, Ajahn Liam, and so on, and even our own Ajahns, they say, you know, this is the best way to live. There's nothing else that really needs to be done. There's nothing we can do in the world that's going to even come close to the sense of ease and lack of problems of one who is living according to non-suffering. So, but to really get ourselves onto that path, we do need to forgive everything. Yeah, there's just no question. And if we can't forgive everything and everyone, then we're not even really getting started on the path. And that's just how it is. So, offer that for reflection this evening.